This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
This is Patsy with a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book. Coming to you from glorious Clearwater, Florida, the perfect place for writers to write and readers to enjoy a good book. And speaking of a good book, I have a song for it.
Staten Island too. It's lovely going through.
Okay, and speaking of a good book, I have a good book for you today, and it is from, now I'm not supposed to say this, but it is from my favorite guest, Douglas Brunt. Hi, Doug.
Great to be with you, Patsy.
Okay, I know I'm not supposed to have favorites, but you are. I can't help it. Something about you, just every time I have you on, I start laughing and giggling. I can't help it. You know, I get teased about those interviews with you because something, you know, I love Manhattan. And of course, you wrote Ghosts of Manhattan, and which the minute I read it, and that was before I had the radio program, I fell in love with the book. And I play this song. This is one of my songs that is sort of my go-to song for whenever I want to feel good. And so I'm all connected. This song is connected with you now, and I imagine you dancing down the streets of Manhattan.
It's like you've got a spy camera on me. That's what I'm doing all the time.
Yeah, well, that's what I figure. I just see it in my mind. I see it. And I am so happy to have you back on, and because today we're going to talk about, of course, your new book, Trophy Son, which I'm sure is going to be another bestseller. For several reasons. One, it's a very good book, and two, you've timed the release perfectly for tennis season, because of course it is about all the promos and all the writing up about it. It talks about how it is goes into the world of professional tennis and the use of performance enhancing drugs. But to me, it's much more than that. I know that we'll talk about that, but I really, again, I think your writing is so good.
Thanks, Betsy.
You are able to really tell a story. And in this book, of course, let's talk about the main character, Anton Stratus, and about his career. We'll talk a little bit about that. Then we're going to come back and talk about just about your writing. So tell us about Anton.
The book is about a professional tennis player, beginning with his early youth as a tennis prodigy and going through his professional career. And one of the things that I really wanted to explore in this book is some of the troubling things that I'm observing around youth athletics, early single sport specialization and early intensity in youth athletics, almost sort of a pre-professional environment that our little 8 and 9-year-olds are experiencing. And it's very different from how I grew up. I was born in the 70s. I was applying out to colleges in the 80s. And this is not how I spent my weekday evenings or all weekend. But it really is the reality today that if you are hoping that your child has an athletic experience in high school, they've got to get on that track on these 8 and 9-year-old travel teams for soccer and lacrosse. And as a parent and as a kid and as a family, that's a big decision. It's a sacrifice in terms of all your spare time. There's practices every weekday evening. There can be 6 soccer games across the weekend. So there's, you know, camping and roasting s'mores around the fire. That's out. There'll be this 10-year period when your kids are, 8 to 18, when your life revolves around youth sports and the travel required for it. And it's a shame because the other piece of it is each of these sports increasingly requires the kids to pick one. The leagues, the soccer and the cross leagues, will schedule over each other, and the coaches encourage you to just do their one sport. And so it's a very narrow way to grow up as a kid, not only athletically, but socially. And increasingly, there's a bit of a backlash against this. A lot of professional athletes have come out and said, you know, with regard to just sports, it's better to play many sports for as long as you can. Steph Curry says you'll be a better basketball player if you can play a few sports through high school, not just basketball. I picked tennis because it's really at the extreme end of all this. With soccer and lacrosse, you're still meant to finish high school and go to college and play through there. With tennis, and you down in Clearwater and in Florida, you may see some of this. If you're good at tennis at the age of 13 or 14, you are pulled out of school. You don't even go to proms. You're down in a tennis academy. Many of them are in Florida, where you drill tennis 8 hours a day and, you know, sort of take some classes there as well. But you're really pulled out of a sort of the typical American upbringing to really focus and specialize in on this, on a tennis career. And it's a very narrow and very specialized way to grow up.
Well, and I think over the years we've seen that change, because I remember years ago when we used to see Chrissy Everett playing, she seemed to have a joy, as a young player. And over the years, there's less and less joy in their faces as you watch these performers.
That's true. I did a lot of research for the book. I talked with some top American professionals like James Blake and John Isner. And so you'll find, as I think you've read it, you'll find that the book is a real sort of ripping page turner of a novel. And there's a lot of insight into the life, both on and off the court, for players. And James Blake, I've stayed in touch with, he read the book. He's covering the French Open now for the Tennis Channel. And so he was flying over to Paris, and he read the book on the flight and his first night there, and he sent me an email from Paris saying, "You got it exactly. Like, this is, I was feeling that same feeling in my gut for those moments, both on and off the court, where, you know, the real aspects of that professional life that you struggle with." So,
well,
I think it's a good piece of fiction, but I think you'll also learn something as you read it.
And of course, it's not all fiction, because you do use some people's names in there, which I'm sure is causing some controversy in the world. And I was thinking, oh, you're going to be sitting, you know, like if you go to Wimbledon or something, and somebody's going to do an ace and bop you right on the head. I'm worried about you sitting, you know, up there. Don't sit anywhere where they could you know, do an ace towards you, because I'm not sure they're all happy about it. But
right. Well,
you know,
I bet some are. And the New York, you're referencing, I think, the New York Times article on the book that talks specifically about characters in the novel speculating about performance-enhancing drugs by certain players. And we know performance-enhancing drugs are in tennis. There have been positive tests. There have been suspensions. And the question really is, how prevalent is it? How affecting is the testing around it? And there's lots of credible reporting that the performance-enhancing drugs issue is broader than the positive tests that have been made public.
Well, as I said, you know, it's a marketing strategy, great marketing strategy to have it come out here just as the tennis season is building up and we're heading towards everything. And I'm sure it's going to, you know, get a lot of readers for that reason alone, just from the tennis side. But then I think as a novel, I found it very compelling. Again, you've done it in the first person perspective, where you are really into the character, and we really want to understand Anton. And he's described Dickens loving prodigy, which I found cute. Why Dickens?
Well, part of that is that I happen to love Dickens myself. And in my own background, I was a shy kid and love literature, and that was always a great escape for me. And it fit well with this character who's in a very isolated set of circumstances as a tennis prodigy. It's not a team sport where you have camaraderie and you get in the huddle and you share this experience with teammates. Tennis is an individual sport, and even among the individual sports, it's really an isolating thing. You know, when you're out there practicing or in a match, you're out there in a bubble, and in these match environments, you're not even allowed to talk to your coach. You know, so that period on the court is really sort of a microcosm of the whole experience.
Well, I think just like you did in Ghosts of Manhattan, where you got us into Nick Farmer's shoes, and we really cared about him. We really wanted something good to happen to him. And the entire book were part of our sort of investment in Nick's success and Nick's not falling off the rails, not collapsing, not breaking down. As a reader, we invested in him. And I think the same thing here with Anton. We want him to be okay. And I like that, of course, the fact that he does read makes it him a more, you know, three-dimensional character. He is searching for something. And I you mentioned there that he reads, like, so he'll go through a phase where he'll read all of F. Scott Fitzgerald, all of Dickens. Did you do that as a kid, too?
I did. I had various phases similar to the ones I described for this character. Yeah, I had a DeMille phase, a Ludlum phase, a Mark Twain phase, Hemingway, John Irving.
Yeah, that's how I've always read, because, like, if I find somebody I really like, I just want to know if I start maybe at a new book that they've written, I want to go back and find out, how did they get there? How did they develop as a writer? And so I love that. I loved that you had that in, you know, that Anton did that. And I think it makes it, it's very intriguing for readers to say, okay, well, he went through these phases of reading. Maybe I should, like, pick up a book and start reading. You know, I like that.
Well, thanks for saying that. I do think that Anton is a well-rounded out, three-dimensional, real person in the novel. And you do feel something for him. You do. When you think of the top five tennis players in the world, the first thing that jumps to mind is not necessarily feeling sympathetic for them. You know, they're these big stars making tons of money. They're on covers of magazines and getting lots of celebrity and wealth. But there's another side to it that, you know, for some of these athletes, they were sort of plucked and thrown into this thing from a young age, you know, too young to be making decisions for themselves. And again, you know, I think Roger Federer's got a great life. I certainly am not feeling sorry for Federer. I think he's got a terrific situation going on. But there are challenges to it. And there are certainly challenges for those players who make all those same sacrifices but never crack the top 500 in the world. You know, there are a lot of players who go through the same grueling grind that the top players do, but they're not famous and they are struggling to pay their travel bills when they go around to various tournaments.
Well, you know, one of the nice things in this book, first of all, you are able to describe, because I know partly because you did play tennis, but you really describe the unique setting of tennis and make it interesting to those people who have not been involved in tennis.
Yeah, the behind the scenes and, you know, on the court aspects of the book, I think, will be illuminating for a lot of people. Even if I've had people who played competitive college tennis say, I really learned something there. And then the father-son relationship is key to the book as well. And that is a common, on the pro tour, that parent-child relationship is often strained. You can look around to see some of the top players, whether it be Steffi Graf or Andre Agassi or Mary Pierce. On down the line, it's very common for there to be a domineering parent involved, either a tiger mom or a domineering dad, behind that early push into tennis and that drive. And sometimes that works out well. Some kids love it and want it. Some parents are having a good time. Others, it can be a little bit more of a toxic situation.
Now, what I like also about this book is it's fast-paced. Just as you did in particularly, I think, in Ghosts of Manhattan, I don't want to use the word spare, but you don't waste a lot of time on unimportant things. The story moves. You tell it in a very compelling way. And how do you feel that you've developed since Ghosts of Manhattan? Now, that's how many years ago?
2012.
Yeah, so in these years, you're developing beautifully as a writer.
Oh, thank you.
You know,
I
can see the phrasing. I see the sentence structure. I look for that kind of thing, and I keep saying, oh, boy, he's so good. He's so good. I get so Thanks. Thrilled.
I mean, it's not exactly a thriller of a novel. It's a little more of a literary piece of fiction in some way. But I do want it to be fast-paced, and I picture the reader leaning over the book, anxious to get that next page turned, almost to the point where they're going to rip it as they're pulling it across to get on to the next page of the story. And so when I'm writing it, I'm trying to infuse it with that level of energy so that the reader just goes ripping through it when they pick it up.
Well, I think you've accomplished that. I really do, because it you keep it the interest alive constantly.
Well, thank you.
Wow. So let's just talk for a minute. I know I don't have too much time with you because you're busy with all this release, and people are, as I said, they're going to be concentrating on the the drug aspect and all of that. But I want to talk about just how are you finding the writing? Is it coming easier to you? Do you find yourself living with these words around you all day now?
I'm still loving it. And I know friends who are successful writers who procrastinate. They're like, man, you know, I finished the last book and now I'd rather paint my house than start the next one. I'm just, you know, I'll put it off for almost anything. But I really love diving into it. It's quiet time. It's time to myself. It's creative time. And my approach has been, we have three kids, so we split up and drop the kids off at school in the morning. And then I try to write from 9 to noon every day. And I found a few places around the city where I like to write. And that's about it for me. 3 hours is the most. Sometimes it's just 2 hours. And until I feel like I start to lose concentration. And the average day I might get 700 words. Sometimes it's far less. Sometimes it's only a sentence or so. And other days it could be double that. But I'm not keeping a quota, really. It's just sort of what happens to work on that day. And I try to do that Monday to Friday. When I'm in that phase of putting a few pages on the pile every day, that's the routine. But as you know, I do a lot of research before I start the books. And so when I've picked the next idea, I'll dive into research, and both primary research, you know, interviews with folks, and in the case of this last book, with some pro tennis players.
Well, tell me, do you do readings? Do they have you do readings of your book ever?
Yeah, I've got a bunch of events, mostly around the New York area, Philly and D.C., a couple other spots. I'm going to be out in California in a few months. And I actually don't like doing the readings. I've talked to some other writers about this. Some folks like to do the reading. I always feel awkward doing the reading. So I do it mainly in conversation with other writers, or I'll just get up there and give a spiel about this particular book and the process and talk about the research a bit that I did for it, which, you know, depending on the book, can be very interesting who I spoke to and how I went about it.
And do they have like life-size cutouts of you at the bookstores?
Yeah, they do. I had on Pub Day. For some reason, books always come out on a Tuesday. It's this arcane thing. I'm actually not sure why. But books always come out on a Tuesday.
Because it's a good luck day.
I did an event at Barnes & Noble in conversation with Harlan Coben. And so, yeah, they did have a sort of poster thing out there.
Well, Tuesday is a good luck day. That's why they do it.
Okay. Yeah, well, that explains it.
And as a matter of fact, Jewish people try to get married, actually, on Tuesdays, because in the old days, they used to get married on Tuesday because it is a good luck day.
Good.
And so that's why they, I think they still, it's still back there in the publishing world that Tuesday is a good luck day, and that's why they do it. But what I want to know, you know, last time with Ghost Manhattan, you sent me this lovely book and with a nice, you wrote in it, and I have it on my webpage because I love it. What I want you to do is steal one of these life-size guys and send it to me, because this isn't fair. I want this here in the corner here so I can look at, because, you know, I got in trouble before when I put your Facebook page up, and then I started giggling because I'm telling people that you're so gorgeous I can't concentrate. It's impossible to concentrate if I'm looking at your face. But I think it would be so fantastic. Because I'm sure some girl in one of these places grabs these things. You know, they grab it and they have it in their bedroom. And I think it should be in a radio studio.
That is funny. Well, I didn't grab anything on the way out of Barnes & Noble on Tuesday, but it's in the city. So I'll stop by tonight and see if they'll
pick it up, get it, and send it to me, because I can tell you I will have it here in the studio, and you will be in the studio with me. Just think of this. I sometimes get silly anyway, but I get so silly when I look at you, because I do think of Dancing Through Manhattan with you. And I'm sure every girl who sees your life size cutout will be doing the same things. But I will have a lot of happy guests here when they come to the studio and see you. So you should do that for me, okay?
I will. You are too kind.
Okay. Well, I'm so happy to talk to you, Doug. Have a wonderful tour. And just as I always say, you know, the most important thing is our family and our children. Just treasure them and hold them to you and love them so much, because they are, in the end, they are the most important thing.
That is the truth.
Okay. And I'm just so proud to have, you know, just sort of started with you at Ghosts of Manhattan, and you're getting better all the time. And
you've been with me the whole way.
Exactly. And I'm so happy to talk about Trophy Sun and to put it on my summer reading book club and to promote it for you, because it's a wonderful book.
Well, thanks, Patty. It's always great to be with you.
Okay. Bye now. Bye-bye, Doug.
Bye.
Okay. Ghosts of Manhattan. Oh, do we have Ghosts of Manhattan? Oh, I wanted to play it again. But anyway, we'll come back after commercial. We have it. Oh, good. I'm so happy when I hear this song.
It's lovely going through the zoo.
Okay, we'll go to commercial now. Thanks, Ed.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
I stayed up all night reading this book. We can say that on your behalf to media and tastemakers, but it would be silly for you to brag on your own book. When you need a champion in your corner promoting your work, JKS Communications is with you every step of the way. We take care of the details of promoting you and your book so that you can spend your time and energy focusing on what you do best. Radio and TV interviews, newspaper features, book tours, social media, video. You can do it all, and we're here to make it happen. In 12 years, we've helped more than 700 authors and 1,200 books find their fan base. Everyone at JKS Communications loves what we do, and it shows in our enthusiasm. We're going to make a great team with you. Check us out at jkscommunications.com.
Hello, I'm Mike Lindell, the inventor of My Pillow, and like all of you out there, I had problems sleeping. Pillows would go flat, I would flip-flop all night long, I would wake up with a sore neck, maybe a headache, or feel like I needed a nap even though I slept 8 hours. When I invented My Pillow, I wanted it to where you can move the patented fill to give you the exact support you need as an individual, regardless of sleep position. My Pillow will get you into that deep sleep faster, and you will stay there longer. It's not about how much time we spend in bed, it's about how much of that quality sleep we get. I do all of my own manufacturing right here in the United States. I have a 10-year warranty. You can wash and dry My Pillow, and I give you a 60-day money-back guarantee, so you have nothing to lose.
Mike is offering 50% off his 4-pack special.
Go to MyPillow.com or call 1-800-871-1543 and use the promo code PATSY, and Mike will offer you free shipping. Once again, that's 800-871-1543, promo code PATSY, P-A-T-Z-I.
Are you an author, an artist, an inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications, to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660 or visit our website at larsonpatentlaw.com.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
This is Patsy with a Z, and I am back, and I had so much fun talking to Doug Brunt, and I hope that everyone will read his book. You know, when you're watching tennis, it's a great book just to have along with you. It's not a very big book. It's easy to read, and it's really tells you a lot of the behind the scenes of tennis, many things that I didn't know, maybe some things I didn't want to know, but nevertheless, it is interesting, and I think that you will enjoy it. As always, I love Doug Brunt's writing. It is fast-paced and interesting, so I hope you will get that book. Now, I am so happy to welcome to Joy on Paper a new writer, somebody who's just starting off, Christina June. What a perfect name for today, because it's June 1st. And she has a new book. It's called It Started With Goodbye. Is Christina there?
I'm here.
Okay. Okay. Hi, Christina. It's so nice to have you on the program. Your book is just, you know, the word is charming. It's charming and delightful. We can say both of them.
Thank you.
Yeah. It's a perfect, really a perfect romance with sweet characters. And I, you know, it's just, it's cute. And it is a sort of a takeoff of Cinderella, a contemporary takeoff of Cinderella. But, you know, with some little twists and lots of interesting things in between.
Yeah, that's pretty accurate.
Okay. So, Christina, tell me, this is your first book, published book, first book ever, or what?
First book published. This is the fourth book that I wrote.
Fourth book that you wrote, first book published. And so that's exciting for you, huh?
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Oh, wow. And I think that it's going to be very well received because, as I said, you know, there are a lot of these Cinderella books, but, and I love Cinderella books. I never get tired of them because I always love to see, you know, what's going to happen. So tell us a little bit about your book, because it's really a nice take on it about a 16-year-old girl named Tatum.
Yep.
And what happens to her and how she lands up in trouble.
Yeah, so I actually got the idea for the book when I saw an abandoned girl's dress shoe on the side of the road, and I thought, wow, I should write a Cinderella book. but I hadn't read any contemporary retellings of Cinderella, so I knew that that was something that I wanted to try and take on, which is interesting because there are a number of contemporary Cinderella retellings that have come out in 2017, so I'm really excited to be part of that group. But Tatum is sort of an every girl, and she definitely makes a lot of mistakes. She winds up in the wrong place at the wrong time with her best friend, which lands her on family-imposed house arrest for the summer. So instead of sort of wallowing, which she does a fair amount of, but she tries to channel her sort of negative energy into something positive. She starts a secret graphic design business. She does some community service, and she has a flirty email exchange with a client. So for me, it was a lot of fun to write, really fun to turn sort of those classic elements into new, modern things. And yeah, I really enjoyed working with the fairy tale framework.
Well, you're right. As a matter of fact, because I get so many free books, I can tell you that I think I have a dozen Cinderella books this spring. I've had perhaps a dozen, and yours is the only one that I have wanted to review because
thank you.
Because what I enjoyed about it, well, I like Tatum, as you say, you know, she could have just wallowed in the misery of mm-hmm. the punishment of house arrest, but she makes something of it, and there's enough humor and enough little twists and turns in the story to keep it going. And I just found it amusing.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
And the nice thing also, the problem with Cinderella stories is if you get, you know, if it's sort of marketed as a Cinderella story, but then it's inappropriate for the age, mm-hmm. This is not good. But your Cinderella story is nice. It's I think, just a perfect read for a young girl.
Thank you. It's funny. A lot of readers I've found didn't realize that it was Cinderella, which is fine. You know, I think it's subtle enough that if you're not looking for it, you won't necessarily see it. But it that was intended.
Well, that's true. It's not smack up there. Oh, okay, this is another Cinderella story. It's just it is in that sort of genre. But it is just a well written story, and it's so beautiful that you got the idea from seeing a shoe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Everybody likes that.
I think that's absolutely fantastic. Now, when you said this is the fourth book, so what do you do? You work, right?
I do. I have a full-time job. I am a high school counselor. I am also a full-time parent and adult. I write in the little pockets of time when I'm not doing those other things.
So, as a high school counselor, then have the students in your school know that you've written this book?
Yeah, some of them do. Mm-hmm. We have a good number of kids who are interested in being writers, so we talk about that together.
And what were your other books, the ones that you didn't get published yet?
Oh, gosh. A lot of things that will never see the light of day, Trump novels, but they're usually young adult contemporary, almost always some element of romance. But I do have a companion novel to It Started With Goodbye coming out next May, which is the stepsister's story, and it is based on Little Red Riding Hood.
Okay, we're going to go stick with the fairy tale theme.
Yeah, continuing with that.
Why not? It works. It's worked for hundreds of years, so why, why not? You know, if
exactly. I think there's stories that people relate to, and there's something you said for working with the familiar.
So does writing come easy for you?
That's a very hard question. I think it's something that I enjoy because I've always been a reader, and so I think I've always studied sort of the things that I read, and so I knew when I got started that there were certain elements that you had to put in and certain things to avoid, but I certainly wouldn't say it's easy. It takes me time to plan and think of the plot and everything. So I really enjoy drafting. That's my favorite part of the process, getting it out of my head and onto the paper and the revisions that are a little more tedious.
So how did you find a publisher?
I went very traditional. I queried agents with It Started With Goodbye, which was originally titled Valedictions, and found my agent probably after 3 or 4 months, and then she took my novel on submission, and on our fourth round, after 14 months, we connected with Blink, and it was a perfect fit. So I think I've learned that publishing is very slow and involves a lot of rejection, but it just takes one, so I've been very lucky.
Well, and that you landed up with Blink is wonderful because they are a fantastic group.
Mm-hmm. They have taken very good care of me.
Yeah, they are a very encouraging group, and they work very nicely. I know I'm always happy to have their authors on because of the fact that they support you and they go out of their way to make sure that people like me hear about you. And so I'm always happy to have their people on.
They're wonderful.
Now, what writers influenced you the most, do you think, over the years?
I have always been a very big fan of Judy Blume.
Oh.
Are You There, Goddess Me, Margaret is one of my most favorite books of all time. And I think that from her, I found that books can make you feel like you're not alone. In the YA world, we talk a lot about representation in novels and it's how important it is for you to see yourself on the page. And so she was probably the first author where I saw myself. And so I would like to do that for my readers as well.
Oh, she is inspirational.
Yeah.
Really.
Yeah.
I still love her fudge books. I get such a kick. I was organizing my books. Well, I'm always organizing my books. And particularly now because I'm getting so many more books all the time. there's one of the fudge books. And, of course, my boys are long gone from the home. But I had to sit down and read it again because it just... How could you not? If you have a fudge book in your hand, you've got to read it. And and that's really a wonderful, testimony to her talent that she has created characters that you want to read and reread. And the thing is, I found that with Tatum, I found her to be an intriguing character. I liked her. I liked what you did with her.
Thank you.
So
I like her too, and I she is very much me at 16.
So you've drawn upon somebody.
Yes.
Well,
she feels very like she's right all the time, and that was definitely me as a teenager.
Well, I think that you've done a good job with her because I think she's a character that kids will relate to, and she's not sometimes in young adult fiction they're too I can't say the word on the radio. They're too smart, you know. They're like too wisecracking, and I don't like that. And I just think Tatum is a nice combination, and you've done a good job with the family too.
Thank you. It was important for me to make the family dynamics somewhat realistic. Many years ago, I was a family therapist, and we talked a lot about dynamics and systems, and so I find that I put that a lot into my writing and making sure that the family systems are realistic and something that even if that's not your family, you could find something that is relatable as well.
Now, once you found your agent, how did the process go? We're talking, many of my listeners, of course, are people who are like you. They've written a book and they're trying and they're doing the query letter business and they're waiting and they're in the process. Some have heard back and some haven't heard back, and they never know, exactly what's going to happen. But once the agent became interested in your project, did you actually work with her on the book?
I did, yeah. We went through several rounds of revisions, and we sort of just, shored up relationships and fleshed out a couple of characters a little bit more and just made it nice and shiny. And then she wrote a pitch letter, which was wonderful, a really, really smart summary of the book. And she went through all of her contacts, and she figured out which editor she thought it would be the best fit with, and she sent it out. And then we waited.
And waited.
And waited and waited.
And then how did you hear the news? She called you?
So she sent me an email when the editor that she had sent it to at Blink, Jillian Manning, she sent me an email saying that Jillian really loved the book and she wanted to take it to the next level. And at Blink, there are several levels after the initial editor enjoys the story. So this is something that I didn't know when I first started out, is that your book has to make it past not only the editor that you're going to work with, but it has to make it through the other editors, and it has to make it through sales and marketing, so that not only will one person who's working on it love it, but they have to be able to sell it and make sure that readers will want to pick it up off the shelf. So it's really a big team process, and so that probably took about a month. And then we got the offer, which was amazing.
Well, that's one thing. That's why I wanted to ask you, because that's something that so many of my, people who I try to help, and they, I help them sometimes with query letters, and they're working and they're waiting. But they don't understand that the process does take time, and that it's, it isn't something that happens overnight. And like you said, it has to go through editors. And so many people who self-publish, they don't have any editors, or they have, just one person that they hire. And it's a different process when you're going through a major publishing house. But I think the end result is excellent. In your case, it's fantastic. They've done a great job with you. And, of course, I love the cover.
Thank you. I love the cover, too. Shout out to the designer, Darren Welch. He's fantastic.
Exactly. They don't get sometimes enough credit, but when they come out with a cover that really is eye-appealing, mm-hmm. and that catches a person's eye, whether it's on a shelf or whether it's a little icon on Amazon, this is so important to have a cover that just grabs a reader, right away.
Yeah, I agree.
And he did a great, great job.
And I'm very lucky that he's designed the second one as well, which is not out there yet. It will be on June 15th. We will have a cover reveal, but I can tell you it is spectacular.
Oh, that's great. Yeah, that people don't realize how very important that cover can be. It can make a big difference, especially, you know, when people are looking at books after books on Amazon. And they get all these pop-ups of, you know, what book to look at. If that cover pops right up, you know, you like that cover, it makes a big difference. And I think in your case, your cover is really great.
Thank you.
So what are your plans for the summer? Are you going out on tour? Are you going to do promotions?
Yeah. So my next event is going to be on June 11th. It is the Downtown Columbia Book Festival, their very first one. So I'm really excited to be part of the inaugural event. And I'm going to be on a panel with Miranda Keneally and Sonia Belasco and Katie Upperman, all fellow young adult authors. And we're going to be talking about feminism in young adult literature. So that's on Sunday, June 11th. Columbia, Maryland, if any of your listeners are interested, we would love to see you. And then Katie Upperman also, she and I are planning a short tour. We're going to go south. We're going to hit up some places in North Carolina and Georgia and try and connect with educators and librarians. So we will put that information out soon, but that'll be in August.
Well, I think this will be a good librarian pick.
I hope so. I've heard from several librarians, and I had had the opportunity to talk with a bunch at ALA Midwinter in January, and they were just so warm and receptive. So I'm really excited to continue making those connections.
Well, as I said, because I don't know what word to use exactly. It's not. There's nothing off-putting about this book. So often, I've discovered, you know, that some writers just have this urge that they have to throw in something ugly to sort of make a statement. And I find that very off-putting, and that's why I really enjoy this book.
Thank you, and I think that's part of Blink's mission is to. Have books that have hopeful messages. And so I appreciate that, you know, through the process, we worked to make sure that it was realistic, but that that message of hope was still there.
And it is. And I like the title. It started with goodbye. What was your first title?
Valedictions.
Yeah.
They wanted something that was a little more catchy. However, I was really lucky that they put the definition of valedictions, which is the way that you sign off on a letter, on the back of the book, and then they also put Tatum's snarky definition.
I like that too. But it's a good title. It started with goodbye, though. It's a catchy title. One I think that is easy to remember. And and your name, I like your name, Christina.
Oh, thank
June.
Thank you very much.
Is June your married name?
No, it's actually my grandmother's middle name.
Ah, okay. So I
wanted to honor her. She actually passed away last September. So this is a way that I could, keep her with me.
Well, I think that's lovely.
Thank you.
And of course, it's a perfect day for you here, June 1st, and the month of June is going to be a very exciting month for you to get out there and. To promote this book. And the most important thing is, as you're out there, to talk to people about reading.
Absolutely.
Did you read a lot as a child?
Oh, yes. I still do. I read everything. I will read the nutritional label on all food packages. I will read safety instructions. And I always have 3 or 4 books going at a time.
Well, that's wonderful. That's what I'm that kind of reader, too. And now, of course, being in a school, you can really help promote reading within your school.
Yeah, definitely. And I have a 6-year-old, so we are constantly reading these days and talking about what she can pick out at the library, and she's excited about doing the summer library challenges.
Oh, I love these summer library challenges. My boys would be in them every year, and or in Barnes & Noble reading challenges, which, of course, Barnes & Noble is a wonderful place to take children during the summer. You just go in there, and they always have something, some event for children. And starting from the very young ones, we have two wonderful Barnes & Nobles here where they have the reading for the youngsters and then all sorts of events, whether it's coloring or you know, reading projects or making things, everything from origami to whatever. And they have all these little projects for the children during the summer. And I just cannot tell people enough that if you really want to do a wonderful thing for your children, get them away from the electronics and just sit them in a bookstore. And it's so nice that most of, you know, there's always this coffee shop now in a bookstore. So you can put the kids there and they can really take part in these events. And you can sit there and have a cup of coffee and just relax and know that they're getting something that will last a lifetime.
Absolutely. And I would also say, in addition to the Barnes & Noble, we really have loved our local independent bookstores. We're very lucky to have two, or sort of in between the two, that have been so wonderful to all the local authors, but their children's events cannot be beat.
Exactly. When we have some here in the area, too, of course, we're mostly here, I'm in Clearwater, a tourist area, and we don't have as many local bookstores here, but we do have in town, and I encourage everyone to go to their bookstore and find out the events for the summer, because they're always full of wonderful events for the summer. And while they are there, they can get your book. And it started with Goodbye by Christina June. And I think it's a great book for young people and a wonderful story. And I think that it's so good that, you know, after you've written three books that didn't get published, but at the fourth one, whoa, it happens, and you're on your way, and you know, it's isn't it wonderful?
Yes, absolutely. And I think my story is an example of perseverance, and that I think I know a lot of people who, most people who are now published, who didn't happen on the first try. And I'll tell you, my first book should never be seen by anyone at this point. I've learned so much since then. So it's a long journey. This is not a sprint.
But the wonderful thing about writing, once you get into it, and I encourage everyone to, you know, try, whether it's if you're just maybe a one-off and it's a memoir, a family memoir, which I think are so valuable. I love family memoirs because it preserves the history of your family, and then you're, you know, 100 years from now, your family won't have to go back and look for DNA. They will have the story. They'll have the story written there.
Yeah,
and of course, if you can be a novelist or even a nonfiction writer, it's something that can last a lifetime. You can still be doing it when you're 89 years old, like Mary Higgins Clark, who, you know, comes out with a new book every year.
Yep.
And it's just, it fills your life with a very special joy.
Absolutely. And people ask me all the time, if you weren't being published, would you still write? And I say, absolutely. As long as the characters are talking, I'll keep doing it.
That's great. Okay. Well, I want to thank you so much for being on today, Christina.
Absolutely.
I feel like I've discovered a new talent, because as I said, I picked you out of a whole bunch of books that I had, and of all of the ones in this sort of young adult fiction area, yours was the one that popped out at me, and I'm so happy that I got to read it and I got to talk to you and to promote your book.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Okay. So we'll be back when you have the next book out.
Perfect.
Come back again, okay?
All right. Thanks, Patsy.
Okay. Bye-bye, Christina.
Bye-bye.
Get back to work there. I think you're still in school today, aren't you?
Just for a little bit longer.
Okay. Back to work.
Thanks.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Okay. She's nice. Anyway, it's going to be fun to read her book if you need a pleasant read. If you just need some time, I could read this book. I think I read it in sort of one go almost, because it's the kind of book that you take with you to the beach, take down to the pool, or find your most comfortable chair in the house and sit down and read it and sip some lemonade. And it's just a nice story. She's done a great job with this little twist on Cinderella. And all inspired, this is what I love when somebody is inspired by one little thing. I'm going to have Nikki Drayden's coming on in next week. And she was inspired by, she was driving down the street and she saw a nail polishing company and they had a particular sign and she'll talk about it when she comes on. And she saw that sign and she said, wow, that's a nice name. I could make a story out of it. So that's what you can do. You can just, and it's, as a matter of fact, it is a fun little exercise to just walk around one day and say, okay, well, here she saw a shoe in the street. What do you see? Something that you see, something that sort of just clicks in your brain and you say, okay, I could write a story about that. Or maybe the title of the name of a store. The name of a street. I was driving down a street the other day, and I liked the name of the street, and I thought, wow, you could turn that into a story, something, and who knows? Maybe if I have time, I will actually write it because I'm so busy with all the books everybody's sending me, particularly from Blink and Zonder Kids, and I want to thank them so much because they are so wonderful to me. And they send me so many wonderful books. So all of these books are on my website, on my book club page. So you can go to that. It's radio-joyonpaper.com. And the book club section are, you know, I have all of the books that I recommend for the summer reading. And then also, if you're interested in listening to some of the interviews, I have Mary Higgins Clark. She's been on three times. You can listen to her interviews on my archive page. I have also Doug Brunt's first interview that I did with him about Ghosts of Manhattan, which is one of my absolutely most favorite interviews because I was very silly, and I kept him on for an hour. So I was very lucky that day that he didn't have a publicist standing over him like he had today because they warned me that he had to go, and so when that happens, they always have the publicist sitting next to him, and I was so happy that he didn't have to go right away. But you can find his interview on my archive page, and I hear the music playing, so that means Big Ed is saying, I'm on my way out today, and I just want to remind everyone that just find your joy and share it and say something nice to somebody. I'm going to say something nice to Big Ed because he's been very helpful as always today, and he's saluting me, and I salute him. And take care, and everybody have a great weekend. Bye.